people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
Getting through all the hurdles to successfully build and open affordable housing developments involves a wide range of skill and a fair amount of tenacity. Financing affordable housing can be very tricky, and it involves a lot of coordination between government entities and, in many cases, nonprofit organizations. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, where today's topic is how affordable housing is currently funded and what models make the most sense for the future. Our guest is Carol Galante, a well-known expert in the field and president of Bridge Housing Corporation, the largest nonprofit developer of affordable housing in California. She's a director of the National Housing Partnership Network, the California Housing Finance Agency, the California Housing Consortium, and the Center for Creative Land Recycling. As co-chair of California's successful Proposition 1C campaign in 2006, Carol helped to ensure that a $2.85 billion bond was passed for affordable housing and urban infill development. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
So I'm assuming you have no personal life with all those boards.
Not much.
Not much. Let's start out with a broad overview of how affordable housing is funded. Is the bulk of the money provided in each individual state?
Yes, there are some federal programs, but the federal programs are allocating monies normally to the state governments, who then allocate it out to individual project-based financings.
And that is the main way that nonprofit housing developers actually get the money to embark on these sorts of projects?
Every development we do is actually built with a whole variety of funding sources. And, you know, a typical development will have 7 or 8 funding sources. And each of those have separate applications. Some of them are to the state government. Some might be through your local redevelopment, through taxes that are paid at a local level. But there are distinct pots, we call them, distinct pots of money that each project has to go cobble together, to create this layer cake of financing.
And it doesn't make sense?
It doesn't make sense on two levels, from my point of view. One level is that you've got separate monitoring, separate applications, separate requirements. So one requirement might be for helping people at $10,000 or less of income. Another might want you to serve someone at a higher income level. So each piece, there can be some conflicts in those different pots of money. So from that perspective, it makes it very difficult. Now, why is it done that way? You know, one reason it's done that way is it makes everybody is taking a little piece. And so everybody's sharing the pain. And when I say everybody, I mean local government sharing some pain. Maybe the private development community building market rate housing is putting some money in through in-lieu fees instead of having to build it themselves. So they're sharing the pain. And that's one of the reasons it happens that way. But it's very inefficient.
And what about the feds? There's the National Housing Trust Fund. How does that figure into all of this?
Well, not much really at this point. The federal government, you know, has pretty much abdicated its responsibility, in my humble opinion, in directly providing any kind of resources for housing. There's a little bit. There's still some money that comes to cities or to developers through the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. But most of what comes from the federal government is through tax incentives. So they're not direct subsidy programs, there are tax incentives. And again, the good news about that is while it's inefficient in terms of how it gets into the development, it's got a very bipartisan support. And that's one of the reasons it has been probably the longest standing federal program for the development of housing, is because it does enjoy a lot of support from all different parties.
Does support in general for affordable housing ebb and flow depending on what party is in power in Washington?
You know, I would say, you know, traditionally Democrats are more supportive of direct support to helping people who have less income, creating more of a safety net. So in general, you know, the Democrats are more supportive. In an era of budget deficits and people not wanting to pay as much taxes. At that point, it almost doesn't matter what party is involved. You need to find a way to do this in a way that doesn't cost as much money.
You probably can't count the number of hours that you put into Proposition 1C.
I cannot count them.
Nor would you want to.
Right.
At this point.
It would depress me.
And yet, that money will expire.
Yes, it will. Very quickly, actually. It doesn't last very long.
Not at all. Why is that the model?
Again, that's California's model. That isn't necessarily a model that every state follows. And it is the model because there is resistance to people paying, you know, higher taxes or higher fees to create an ongoing stream or streams of income to help subsidize the work that we do. And I just want to say, I even shudder to use the word subsidy because in many circles it's a naughty word. But the truth is, it costs more to build these homes than people can afford to pay. And so there does need to be a subsidy of some kind, whether that's a tax incentive or that's a direct contribution from the state government or the local government. It does require a subsidy.
So what are the next steps to ensure some sort of steady flow of funding to build more affordable housing? Because we're going to need it.
Right. Well, we really need in California. We've number of us who worked on Proposition 1C feel very strongly that we need a, quote, permanent source. And the state housing director right now and the governor are going around the state. In fact, there's one, you know, quite soon, doing workshops saying, trying to get all people's ideas on this. What should the source, you know, how should we fund this? Fee on recording documents has been one idea that has been floated. So, you know, every time you close a house and you have to record a deed of trust at the county recorder's office, maybe there'd be a fee and that would go into a statewide housing trust fund. That's one idea. Another idea is right now many local governments have redevelopment agencies, and a portion of those monies from redevelopment agencies must by state law be spent on affordable housing development. And it's, you know, the state law requires 20%. Well, maybe that ought to be changed to 30% or 25%, or, you know, that would create additional resources. So, but the idea of going back to the people every 4 or 5 years and spending millions of dollars to get them to vote for something, which they keep on voting for, by the way. That's the good news.
So they've spoken.
That's a good way of putting it. They have spoken. So finding a way to institutionalize that so that we don't have to go through that inefficient and expensive process.
What is the role in all of this of affordable housing nonprofits like Bridge and Eden Housing?
Well, that's a really good question, because the role, I'd say two things. One is the role in advocating for a process, a permanent source of housing, is something important for all of us to do, because ultimately we're not the end user, right? The consumer, the people who are going to rent or buy the homes that we're producing, are the end user, but we are the producers. So we are using these funds to produce the housing. And so we think we have, you know, some experience in trying to craft programs that make sense. The second thing I would say is, both at the state and federal level, this idea that everything we do has to be project-specific financing is also inefficient. You know, that's not how it's done in Europe. In Europe, Great Britain actually picks nonprofits and allocates money directly to the nonprofit to produce the housing.
It's a lot of trust.
It's a lot of trust, and they do a lot of monitoring, but it's not going through 5 or 6 different governmental agencies before it gets to the nonprofit, and then they're all monitoring what we're doing. So it's a much more efficient process. Now, I'm not advocating for that for California for this next permanent source, because I think that is too big a leap for all of us to get to. But ultimately, that kind of system, frankly, it is a lot more efficient.
Is government money in this realm best spent on nonprofits?
Well, I think it's a good thing for this kind of money to be spent with, and I'll choose my words carefully here, but with sophisticated nonprofits, because I think you do have to be a little careful that you don't get into the idea of we're just going to sprinkle money around to every little group that decides they think they know how to do this. There are organizations like Bridge and Eden that have been in business for, you know, a lot of years, who have developed an expertise and have demonstrated a track record. And those groups, I think, you are going to get the biggest bang for your buck in terms of these subsidy dollars. And you're also going to get it long term. You know, we are long term committed to making these homes affordable, and that's important. So you're not going to put the money in and then find out 15 years down the road that, you know, the property is no longer affordable.
Great. Well, Carol, thank you so much for being on the Affordable Housing Podcast today.
Glad to be here.
Carol Galante, once again, president of Bridge Housing Corporation. I'm Joanne Green.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.